ISIS is the latest in a long line of terrorist threats facing the United States and the world. While each attack committed or inspired by ISIS captures headlines and drives a political and military response, our next guest says we need to take a long-term view of the terrorist threat and try to understand the reasoning and goals that drive people to acts of terrorism.
Well, it might be an awkward question to ask and answer. He says one thing we need to figure out is, does terrorism achieve the goals of the terrorist groups? Richard Englis joins us now. He's a distinguished professorial fellow in the George J. Mitchell Institute for Global Peace, Security and Justice at Queen's University in Belfast in Northern Ireland. His new book is Does Terrorism Work? A History. Richard, thanks for joining us today.
That's okay. Great pleasure.
A lot of people might look at terrorism, you write about this, and think this is an inherently irrational act, nihilistic, people have called it, so we can't really look at this in terms of rational risks and benefits and evaluate it that way. Obviously, you've written this book, you don't buy that. Why not?
I think the evidence points in another direction. I think it's entirely understandable that we think it's irrational because we think, how can people do this terrible thing? How can they be so vicious? But the evidence across the long history of terrorism suggests that most people who are involved, in the serious movements at least, are people who believe that this is the only way of achieving the kind of goals that they think are necessary and really, really important. Even if we think, as I do, that the violence is entirely unjustifiable, I'm arguing in my book, Does Terrorism Work?, that if we want to try and deal with it properly, we have to understand why people are doing what they're doing. Now, I'm arguing that they're wrong to think that terrorism is going to bring about victory for them, but the fact that they think it is going to bring about victory is one of the main reasons why they engage in violence, whether it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS or other groups around the world. So although it's appealing to think that they're irrational and they're completely nihilistic and crazy, I think actually there's more reason behind it. But being reasoned doesn't mean that you're always right.
Throughout the course of your book, you look at a number of different terrorist groups. You focus in, though, on four: Al-Qaeda, Hamas, the Provisional IRA, and then ETA, the Basque Separatist Group. Why did you pick those four for up-close case studies?
What I wanted to do was to try and get a balance between different kinds of groups. So Al-Qaeda, very famous in the late 20th, early 21st century. ETA's struggle going back a bit further. I didn't want them all to be contemporary, but I didn't want them all to be ancient. Didn't want them all to be European, but I wanted to reflect the fact there was a long history of European terrorism. Didn't want them all to be Muslim groups, but obviously I had to involve groups that were involved in jihadist and other kinds of terrorism. And partly in choosing two Muslim groups, Al-Qaeda and Hamas, I wanted to show that even where groups are both Islamic in origin, they can be very, very different in their politics and in their strategies and in their approach. So the four case studies are not supposed to be saying this covers the whole realm of terrorism. I do look in the conclusion at many more other groups. But what they're trying to say is that there's different geographical, different religious, different political causes. And in a sense, therefore, although there are similarities between different groups, we have to look at the particular context if we're going to explain why people do what they do and in the end try and stop it.
How do we weigh whether a terrorist group's actions work? They may have very complex motivations in a complex world, maybe different goals even within a group. How do you start to measure success?
I think what you've hit on there is exactly the point we need to think about. Rather than just thinking of it being motivated by one goal or about a movement all sharing the same goal, what I'm arguing is that, as with most things that we do as humans, when you look at what a lot of people in a movement do, there are multiple motivations, maybe changing over time, maybe changing between personnel. What I argue in this book is we've got to think about four main ways in which terrorism might work. It might work in terms of strategic success, that you want to set up a political kind of arrangement in a state and you use violence and you succeed. It might also be partially successful, maybe in terms of getting secondary goals. You might not destroy the state of Israel, but you might get revenge against Israel, for example. You might not destroy British rule in Ireland, but you might get the sustenance of resistance. So there's a sort of secondary kind of partial strategic success. I think a third thing is you might have tactical successes. So I think the 9/11 atrocity was a strategic failure, but tragically and awfully, it was a tactical success in terms of the operation. And fourthly, I think there might be some inherent rewards. There might be things you get out of terrorism, which are not primarily to do with the politics, but to do with adventure or excitement, or maybe about feeling righteous, or maybe rebelling against your parents, maybe making money in some cases, maybe getting fame. So I think between those different elements, strategic success, partial strategic success, tactical successes, and inherent rewards, we can explain why a group, whether it's ISIS or whether it's the PLO or whether it's Hamas or whoever, we can explain why lots of people have engaged in this terrible blood-stained kind of politics. And in that sense, I think it's a complex pattern of motivation, and it might be a complex pattern of success or ineffectiveness.
Let's key in on a group now that wasn't one of your main four, but is of primary interest here in the United States and elsewhere, ISIS. With that metric or those metrics you just laid out, how would you evaluate the Islamic State movement?
I think this is a really central question for us all now, whether we're citizens or politicians or whoever. I think strategic victory for ISIS is extremely unlikely. The idea that they're going to sustain the kind of caliphate that they've wanted just doesn't look to me to be possible in terms of the international opposition. I do think that in terms of the second level of success, getting secondary goals, getting revenge, determining the agenda, maintaining resistance against certain kinds of non-jihadist forces, they're much more likely to be successful. Tactically, it's a mixed picture. Yes, they get publicity. Yes, some of their operations are successful. On the other hand, it's also true that some of their operations are manifestly not successful. They're now facing all sorts of difficulty with an international alliance against them. And it's also true that their publicity, though it gains them fame, for the most part, turns most of us against them. The publicity, evidence suggests, makes some people attracted to them, but most people think it's revolting form of politics. And in terms of inherent rewards, I think that the balance is turning. For a while, you saw foreign fighters going in large numbers and being idealistic about what they would get when they went to Iraq and Syria. Now the evidence suggests strongly that many people are disappointed when they get there. Some of them, of course, are killed or maimed, and many people that went out to join ISIS are actually very disappointed. Some of them are trying to get out of the war zone because they found that when they got there, it wasn't what they wanted. So I would say with ISIS, you've got a pattern which is similar to some other groups like Al-Qaeda in the past, that we fear they're going to get victory. They're probably not. What we can do is make their publicity work against them by pointing out the viciousness of their merciless violence. And what we can do is try and make the inherent rewards of terrorism less obvious than the inherent costs of it, so that fewer and fewer people over time will join the group.
Talking to Richard English, he's the author of the book, Does Terrorism Work? A History. Is there something about the practice of terrorism that changes the goals of a group? The initial goal might be an independent state, overthrowing the government, whatever. But as the back and forth goes on between the group and rival groups or the government, the goal shifts into revenge for the last revenge and this perpetual back and forth.
It's a really good question. I think with the groups that go on for a long time, and the ones I mainly focus on in this book are groups that have kept their struggle going for decades, so they've become important organizations. There are two things that really happen. One is they tend to recognize that they're not going to get the victory they initially thought they're going to get, so they kind of lower their sights in terms of what they're trying to get strategically. And in that sense, they're very normal. Many businesses do that. Many sporting teams do that. You aim for something, you realize over time you're going to have to limit your demands, and you make a kind of compromise. And the second thing is that as states tend to contain their terrorist enemies, they make it much more difficult for the terrorist enemy to get the kind of momentum, to get the kind of recruitment, to get the kind of publicity for what they're doing. So over time, you find that groups become, in a sense, it's quite difficult to keep the momentum going for those groups. So they then sometimes try and turn around and say, well, is there another way of getting some kind of result for our violence? In the interviews I've done with people who've been involved in terrorism over a long time, they end up making some kind of compromises and then trying to say that what they ended up compromising for was what they meant all along. And in that sense, again, terrorists are not necessarily that unlike other kinds of people involved in other kinds of activity.
I want to talk about taking this historical approach, because I've got to say, often in the media, looking at political responses, public responses to terrorism, every time a new threat emerges, it's a brand new thing, and there's no precedent for it. And we forget that there's tons of precedent going back decades, even centuries. What do we miss when we don't take that historical approach?
I would argue, I'm trained as a historian, so I'm bound to say this, I guess, but I would argue that we missed quite a lot. Other ways of looking at it can give us all sorts of insights, but the historical way of looking at it can have two particular elements of success for us, I think. The first is that the historical record tends to suggest that terrorists are less successful at destroying societies than we fear they're going to be. So when the 9/11 attacks happened, understandably, everyone thought maybe the world's going to be different forever. When ISIS emerged, people understandably thought, oh, no, this changes civilization. The lesson of history suggests that actually that's not going to be what happens, and we can be more calm and proportionate. The second thing is, I think, repeatedly across state responses to terrorism, there's a tendency to exaggerate what you can do with military methods against terrorist groups. We've seen this with Israel against the Palestinians, with the French against the Algerians, with the British in Ireland. I think we saw it with the war on terror after the 9/11 atrocity as well. Now, it's not that there's no role for the military in dealing with terrorism. I think with ISIS at the moment, there is a role. It's that we shouldn't exaggerate how effective that on its own is going to be. Most of the major political groups that use terrorism do arise out of some kind of political crisis or some kind of political problem. And really dealing with the roots of the problem in the end is going to be what saps the strength strength of their support. So in that sense, I think history suggests that there are different ways of dealing with this than we tend to feel emotionally or in terms of the dominating obsession with present groups when you face a group like ISIS, or more recently it was Al-Qaeda, and before that it would have been other groups perhaps in the Middle East. And I think we shouldn't be blinded by what's happening today so that we forget what we've learned from the past.
So in answer to your question you pose in your title, does terrorism work? You say it's not a simple yes or no question. It's more complicated than that. But here's a quote from your book. I think the evidence suggests that taking another person's life in one's own political cause is far more certain to produce pain and loss than it is to generate expected and beneficent political change. Is that the core lesson or one of the core lessons we can take out of the book?
If there's one thing I'd like readers to take from the book, it's exactly that point, that there's a moral dynamic to these questions. There's a moral question about how we respond to it, but there's also a moral question for anyone involved in a conflict who's thinking of using this violence. What historians studying terrorism suggest is that if you do engage in a terrorist campaign, it's certain that you'll destroy people's lives and ruin people's experiences of being on the planet. What's much less certain is whether you'll get the kind of things you think you're going to justify your violence through getting. And I think that means that there's a moral question for all of us about how we approach conflicts. We need to make it the case that non-violent struggle is going to produce the kind of goods that people want. And we need to recognize that at the heart of terrorism, there's a merciless callousness of violence, and it's not as successful as it is brutal.
Richard, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much indeed.
That was Richard English from Queen's University Belfast. His latest book is Does Terrorism Work? A History.